You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. This week, xCloud is heading for your TV. PS5 players are being banned for selling access to the PS Plus collection, and BioWare loses some major players. This is episode number 31. We are recording for the week of November 30th, 2020. I am Jarrett, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender, the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zolinkevich.
What, am I no longer a Microsoft shill?
I just missed it. I was like, yeah, I just missed it. Sorry. I
mean, we're going to be talking about Phil Spencer. I can slag on him if I'm supposed to do that now.
And only a true Microsoft shill would take offense to me, you know, missing that.
Okay, good. I feel better then.
Yeah, so congratulations. You proved your worth. I'll report back to Phil.
That is my weekly goal, to prove my worth.
Yes. So, yeah, obviously last week we did not record. We just decided to take the week for Thanksgiving. I think on other shows we normally like kind of plan around holidays and say, okay, well, we'll drop a special episode here, but we didn't have anything special planned. So we were just like, you know, we'll take the week off. We'll come back fresh, and that's why we're here. So we got like a little bit, like 2 weeks worth of stuff to talk about. That's so, you know, this show's not gonna be as fresh as it normally is, but I mean some stuff did happen in the last 2 weeks, but nothing like huge, right? I mean PS5s are still out of stock, Xboxes are still out of stock. I mean this is just the way life is gonna be for a while, folks. You know,
Nintendo Switches are not as easy to come by as one might hope.
Yeah. So Nick, what you been up to? It's been 2 weeks. You had to do something.
Trying to buy a Nintendo Switch. Oh, yeah. And they're out there, but they're significantly marked up, which is a pain. No, gaming wise, not too much really. If you remember, I was complaining that the 4-year-old erased my Mario Brothers progress.
Right.
Now he just completely lost the cartridge. So it's completely gone.
So, once he deleted your progress to begin with, I would think you'd probably want to keep an eye.
Took it out and put it like, he took the cartridge out and just left it somewhere, and I don't know where he left it. So yeah, it's, I mean, it's an old game and I still have some of the other stuff. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world, but, yeah, he erased some Mario Party progress. So I had a discussion with him about, like, if you see the letter E for erase, don't click there.
But yeah, that's if I have a kid, I can't share consoles with them. I just can't. Well, I can't. Like, no, don't touch it.
To be fair, he has not. I mean, okay, so he lost like a 14-year-old game. I'll be okay. He erased some Mario Party stuff from the Wii, which again, he's not touching anything that like I would like have a heart attack over, so that's fine. Like, this is as much a learning experience for me as it is for him. You know, he's not like getting into like, you know, my WoW account and deleting my characters or, you know, selling anything for gold there. We're not that far yet.
Now here's your account. You stay on your account. You don't come over to my account.
Exactly.
That's his adult account.
Exactly.
There was an article I read years ago where some guy I think it was a Polygon article, and he was complaining that his kid got onto his Breath of the Wild save and I guess used all of his lightning arrows or something like that. It's like some type of special arrow that's very difficult to come by in the game. His kid just used all of them.
Ooh.
Right. And I forget, and he was saying something like, well, you know, I just guess it doesn't matter because it brings me closer to something. I'm like, fuck that. Like, no, it matters. Like, no. You know how hard I work to get these arrows? Somebody's doing dishes tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. but that's what that reminds me of a bit, so. So that's what you've been doing these last 2 weeks, losing saves, losing games.
Pretty much. But what have you been up to?
I was like, I really want to get through Watch Dogs 2 before Cyberpunk comes out. But Watch Dogs 2 feels like the never-ending fucking game. It really does. It just, that, I don't know what, I mean, it sounds weird that I'd be complaining about this. But Ubisoft does have this problem with their open world games that they kind of pack too much into them, I think, in some cases. You know, like if it's the only game that you are going to buy and play, that's one thing. But man, like Watch Dogs 2 just feels like the never ending game. I've actually stopped doing side quests. Like I'm not doing any side quests whatsoever. I'm only doing main quests at this point, and I'm just kind of like, yo, the game is still going. I think I'm at like 30 hours now, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it feels like a lot. You know what? It probably has a lot to do with how their quests work, because you don't just get a quest and then complete it. You get it, and then it has parts. It has multiple parts to each quest. And in order to get the payoff or the reward for the quest, you got to do all four parts. So if you do a side quest, the side quest has like four parts to it. You got to do all four parts and then you get the followers, right? If you do a main quest, you do four or five parts of the main quest, boom, then you get the followers. But I think maybe it'll feel better if you get the same amount of followers for doing the whole thing, right? But they broke it up into, they just broke it up like every, you did this section, you get this many followers. You did this section, you get this many followers. And maybe that's why it just feels so long. Not to mention, they make you go all over the place. That's another thing. Like, you know, once you're done with this part, travel over here. And once you're done with this part, travel over there. And once you're done with that part, travel over here. And I think that might also be part of the problem, because you're spending a lot of time on the road, a lot of time driving. There's not that many fast travel locations, at least not in places I want to be. So I think that's part of the issue. But if I focus down on it this weekend, I can just get it done and over with. I just want to roll credits on it. You know, I actually did a DLC mission the other day. I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, it's not going to help me out. So, yeah, but for the most part, that's what I've been working on. And yeah, then my backlog basically goes back on pause until Cyberpunk is done. You know, that's it. I mean, I think I talked about it before, but we are starting a Cyberpunk like limited series. So, you know, that's going to be happening. I'm going to be like, you know, neck deep in Cyberpunk for a while. So, we'll see. But, yeah, like, well, you know, I guess we'll start heading into our first topics. Before we do that, though, I'd like to welcome any first time listeners. Thank you for taking the time to check out the Mash Those Buttons show. And also I'd like to thank and welcome back any returning listeners and give a very special thanks to our supporters on Patreon and our subscribers on Twitch. And if you want to know when we go live, just follow us at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. And you can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/themashnetwork. And we'd love to have you join our Discord at mash.gg/discord to join me, Nick, the other hosts, and our great community. So, first things first, let's talk about PS5 users being banned for selling access to the PlayStation Plus collection to PS4 owners. And this article comes from Screen Rant. It reads that, you know, PS5 owners are reportedly being banned for selling access to their PS Plus collection to PlayStation 4 players. The PS Plus collection is a bundle of 20 PS4 games available exclusively for PS5 owners who are also subscribers to the PS Plus service. The PS5 collection includes some of the most popular PS4 games such as Bloodborne, God of War, Crash Bandicoot, Insane Trilogy, and Fallout 4. PlayStation 5 owners who are subscribed to the PS Plus service were granted access to the collection at no extra charge, and all they had to do was sign into the PlayStation on a PS5 account. The PS Plus collection can be played on the PlayStation 4, but only after a user has signed into a PlayStation 5 console. According to users on Twitter, it did not take long for PlayStation 5 owners to find a way to exploit this, and Sony began banning PS5 owners suspected of abusing this loophole. PlayStation 5 users with access to the PS Plus collection were apparently charging PS4 players a fee to sign into their PlayStation 5 consoles, thus giving them access to 20 free games. One user reportedly made more than $133 by charging almost $7 to sign into their account. Thousands of accounts, mostly concentrated in Hong Kong, have already been banned for this exploit. So I wonder if they're banning the PS4 and the PS5 players.
They're banning, I think, the PS5 players. I think I saw it indefinitely, and the PS4 players are only for like 2 months.
Hmm. So what stops them from just creating a new PlayStation account? I mean, you still have the PS5 hardware. They're not bricking the PS5.
No. But you lose access to everything you had on your account, which,
if you bought a bunch of games digitally, that really sucks. Like if most of your library is digital, then that sucks. But then again, it is the PS4 library. You would, in a normal console cycle, obviously this is the new normal, but in a previous console cycles, you would actually end up pretty much dumping your games anyway, right?
Yeah.
So it just may not matter as much, you know? I mean, you'll just get a new PlayStation account and sign into it, and that's your new account, you know? Then you got to start Spider-Man from the beginning. Mm. You know, you go from there. So, but I wonder, do they have this covered in their TOS? Does Sony have this covered in TOS? Like, what if somebody fought back?
They must.
I doubt anybody would. You know, but what if somebody fought back? Like, you know, you never said I couldn't do this with the hardware.
Okay, well, here's what we can do, because you have a PS... Wait, you don't have... Do you have a PS5? No, not yet.
No, Kura does.
Kura does. Okay.
Well, should he be the sacrificial lamb?
I got a PS4. He's got a PS5 then. You know, I'll sign in on my account on his PS5. I'll get access to those games on my PS4. And then, you know, we can pursue any legal repercussions as needed.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll dive right into that. Even though I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about like doing it like that. Even though I'm pretty sure I have, in some form, I have all of those games, whether it be on PC or PlayStation. I do have all of those games on the PS Plus collection, so it wouldn't make a difference. And you just wouldn't play them, Nick.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we're not. That's why we're not criminals. You know, that's why we're broke, man. We're broke.
Pretty much. That's why I'm playing 14-year-old games and keep losing them.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so more PlayStation news. I think a few weeks ago, Jim Ryan said there were no plans for an Xbox Games Pass style deal for PlayStation. However, in an article from Game Informer, it looks like Jim Ryan has changed his tune a bit. It says Sony Interactive CEO Jim Ryan recently opened up to TASS about PlayStation's plans for the future when the question came up about what the company is doing to compete with the Xbox Games Pass. He mentioned there is actual news to come on that very topic. That being said, he did pull attention to the fact that Sony already does have a membership service with PlayStation Now, a solid subscription feature in itself. It's not the same thing. It isn't. So the article actually says the main difference between PlayStation Now service and the Xbox Games Pass service is that PS Now is rooted in the past, whereas Games Pass library is a blend of previous games and new titles on the horizon, especially with no cost day on. Well, I think that was a. I do believe that's a typo. No cost day on launch title released. So yeah, no cost. It's just no cost on launch title releases. I guess they're gonna try something. I just don't know if they're gonna go full-fledged Microsoft. I mean, I'm sorry, like people are saying that Sony doesn't need a Games Pass deal. They don't need it. Yes, they do. Like right now, yes, the PlayStation library or the PlayStation first party library is great. It is hands down better than the Microsoft first party library. But once you get to a certain point, it doesn't make a difference. Where if Microsoft gets enough games on Games Pass that aren't first party, but they're included in Games Pass, get an Xbox because it's actually, it's just a better deal. You would have to be a diehard Sony fan for it not to be, you know what I'm saying?
I think the issue where Sony kind of comes out and maybe doesn't feel they need to compete with Microsoft in this regard is that Games Pass is available on so many different platforms. You know, they have that xCloud feature and that, it, you know, yes, it makes sense. Like, you know, for $300, like, yeah, if I get Games Pass and I'm like, well, I'm playing all these great games on my console or on my PC, I want to play them on my TV in my other room. Yeah. Then I should, you know, buy the $300 console, throw Games Pass on there. And then, you know, I'm good to go. But like Sony, I can't imagine that they're going to necessarily offer a streaming component to go along with that, you know, like I could see them offering it on the console, but like, I can't see me logging into whatever they, you know, Sony calls it on my computer. I mean, PS Now, that's only for the console. You can't play that on the computer, can you?
I thought you could stream it to the PC.
Can you stream to the PC? Maybe I'm talking out of my butt.
PS Now on PC. Yeah. Oh, so okay, never I'm mind looking
then.
At it now.
Never mind then. So yeah. So I don't know. I just find it weird that like, I thought the whole point of games was that, you know, it was the old, the razors and the razor blade thing with, you know, you like the games are the razor blades and the consoles, the razor, but I guess, I don't know. It seems like you're giving away the games at a discount where you've got this service and then people don't necessarily need to buy a console. They just have the service. I don't know if that's what Sony wants to do, but at the same time, like, as far as a competitive thing, like you're right. They don't need Games Pass tomorrow. Like, I think there's enough interesting stuff coming out. You know, the first party title, Sony, I think has the lead there. They've got time to develop an alternative, but at some point you're right that, you know, as these consoles get a little bit older, I think Sony's going to need something to compete with them. They don't. And PS Now is not it.
I mean, several industries have been moving to service-based models because it's consistent revenue. Okay. Perfect example, right? Of even a place that you wouldn't even think you would need it, right? So you've heard of those hand and stone like massage spa places? Yes. Okay. If you go to a hand and stone, the first time you're there, it'll cost you like $60, which I think that's like a standard rate for like an hour massage, right? The first time you're there. When you're done, they will say, okay, do you want to sign up for our subscription service? And it's like, no, I'm okay. They're like, okay, well, the next time you come, the massage is going to be $100. If you subscribe to the subscription service, it's $60 a month and you get a free massage a month. Like, no, you don't. You want me to pay for a massage monthly. It's like, right, what, they, yeah.
Exactly. What you're doing. Yes. Yes.
And so all places are trying to move toward a subscription model or a service-based model. And it's been like that for a long time. Mm-hmm. Blizzard, how many years ago did Blizzard say that all of their games are service games going forward? I think that was like 10 years ago at
easily,
this point.
Easily 10 years ago, yeah.
So everybody's moving towards model. If PlayStation, and you know, it doesn't always work out great. Like sometimes these service models, like kind of suck, but sometimes they work out fine. And if PlayStation doesn't want to move, it's literally just them being stubborn when the rest of the industry and everybody else are moving to these subscription models. Well, you know,
I think there's a bit of a trade-off because on the one hand, like, yes, you have the recurring revenue and you have the guaranteed revenue and, you know, like from quarter to quarter, we can, you know, better estimate what your income is going to be. Whereas, you know, if you put, say, you know, like the next Horizon Zero Dawn, if you put the next God of War in that subscription service, like those games don't need to be part of the subscription service. They're huge. They will sell on their own. But if you don't put them in the subscription service, then the subscription service doesn't have the value that it should. And
right.
And so they've got a way, like, you know, are we better off just, you know, putting these big, you know, market, you know, shattering games out, or are we better off trying to, you know, use them to push the subscription service? And I don't know. I don't know the numbers. I mean, this is the same thing. I think it's like the WWE when they put out their network, and instead of getting the monthly pay-per-views that they would put out, not everybody would buy every monthly pay-per-view, but now you could just pay, you know, you used to pay $50 for, I think even more than $50 for, like, you know, a pay-per-view whenever you get it, usually offered monthly or even like more, every 3 weeks or so. Now you just pay $9.99 a month and you get all the pay-per-views. And now on the one hand, they don't have to cut in the cable providers for that. So that's all straight revenue for them. But on the other hand, you know, and you're only paying the $9. So it works out, you know, it works out that way. But I still think they were making more money off the more expensive pay-per-views. Like you gotta find the right revenue model. And I'm not saying that they can't, but I don't think it's easy. I think that's, you know, you gotta kind of play around with the price and figure it out. But I think they need to do that though. I think it's not the future. This is the now. PS Now should be this service. PS Then should be what PS Now is, and PS Future should be, you know, something even cooler.
Well, yeah, but the thing I was gonna say, like, they, you know, even though they make great first party titles, I don't think they can survive on that alone. You know what console had great first party titles?
Dreamcast.
The Wii U.
Also true.
The Wii U had great first party titles. The Wii had great first party titles, and the reason the Wii sold as well as it did is because of all the hype in the beginning.
Yes.
All the hype in the beginning of the Wii is what sold the Wii.
You don't need to tell me about the Wii because I was playing it.
So, you know, I don't think they want to be in that same box that Nintendo is in. Even now, like the Switch is thriving. One, because it is Nintendo and they have great first party titles, but also because now they have made a ton of third party titles mobile, essentially, with their hardware. And that's why the Switch is thriving. So if Sony puts themselves in a position where the only thing they're really relying on their first party titles, I think that's kind of a bad idea. Because at some point, the Games Pass will overwhelm any type of logic you can have to having a PlayStation subscription besides just wanting to have one, you know? Because like it's like, okay, well, look at who Microsoft is buying. Bethesda, you know what I'm saying? Like, now those are all technically speaking first party Microsoft titles, essentially. So, you know, and then on top of that, you know, whoever has the higher install base, even if it gets Microsoft a higher install base than Sony, that gets them deals. That gets them Call of Duty DLC first. It does, because you know Activision's like a whore like that. They're like, whoever has the best deal, that's who we're going with. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, they have to do something. Microsoft is responding. Microsoft responded very well to the fact that Sony was beating the shit out of them in terms of first-party titles. And now Sony, if they want to survive, they cannot just sit there while Microsoft is winning the subscription service and cloud service, you know, battle right now. They need to do something. We, as gamers, need them to do something. Microsoft needs to have stiff competition if we want both companies to really excel.
I could,
for gamers, not personally, but go ahead.
I could see Sony kind of taking an early lead over the Xbox games, and as the consoles age, you know, Games Pass, the value for that increases because there's ever more games on there. Still newer games plus the older games, you know, that they get more prominent. And unless Sony does something, I could see then Microsoft coming from behind, and then I could see Microsoft closing out the generation either in it with a commanding lead or at least a narrow lead.
Exactly. And I really do believe Sony has smart people working there. So they have to be. I am curious to see how they respond to this. So a little bit more Sony news. Actually, it's not Sony news. It's Sony related news. A man's wife sold his PS5 after she discovered that he lied and said it was an air purifier. And this is from radio.com. A Taiwanese man was one of the lucky few to actually get his hands on a PlayStation 5. Unfortunately, his wife wasn't really thrilled about the amount of video game he played preceding the purchase. So he had to hide the fact that he bought one from her. So he told her that it wasn't a PlayStation, it was an air purifier. And you have to see the picture from the website. It looks like the air purifier looks like a PS5. It does look like a PS5.
a slim PS5, but it's not far off.
Yeah. So unfortunately, his wife was able to figure out that it wasn't an air purifier pretty quickly. Probably because it was too big and it was like pumping out a ton of heat more than likely. Yeah,
I was going to say, he should have said it was some kind of heater.
And I don't know. I'm pretty sure it has PlayStation somewhere on it, you know, probably. And so basically what happened was is she ended up selling the PS5, and the guy who bought it said it was the cheapest he had seen. So not only did she sell it, she sold it probably for under market value. Oof.
Somebody got lucky.
Somebody got lucky, but I'd be getting a divorce.
What I think, well, yes, but what I think is that Sony doesn't need Games Pass. What they need to do is market this or put out a special edition PS5 that actually has air filter branding on it. So that, you know, instead of saying PlayStation, it says air filter or whatever, they can, you know, partner up with an air filter company. And this way, you know, maybe, you know, slim it down a little bit, tweak the shape so it looks more like the picture on the right there. And this way, yeah, when you do buy it and you say it's an air filter, it's that much harder to distinguish that it's not.
I mean, you can't even go with like, you know how difficult it is to get one of these? I had to buy it. Like, I had the opportunity. I had to buy it because they're so difficult to get. You can't even go with that.
I feel like I don't disagree with him for buying it. If you have to go to the lengths of saying it's an air filter, do a better job hiding it.
Yeah.
Like you could, you don't need to leave it like out all the time. Like put a blanket over it or something. I don't know. hide it under your bed, you know, bust it out. Only clearly he's not playing that in front of her. So it's not like, he's only playing it when she's not around. So yeah. So, you know, keep it in a closet and only, you know, break it out.
Maybe she tried to turn it on to purify some air.
That would be my guess. That would be
and
my guess.
It was just like, it wasn't doing anything, you know, come on, work. And then she figures it out. I don't know. Maybe it's just common sense that has X's and O's all over it.
Yeah.
Might actually have done it, but yeah. Well, guy, that really sucks. That there must be pretty tense in that relationship right now.
I just wonder if he had gotten an Xbox Series X, what would he have said that was? Like a mini fridge?
Oh, man. So let's go ahead and move on to some Microsoft news. This was a surprise to me, but this is an article from gamesindustry.biz. Microsoft has acquired Smash.gg. So if you're not familiar with Smash.gg, they are, I don't want to say esports org, but it's like an esports website where you can organize tournaments and do brackets and stuff like that. So yeah, I was actually pretty surprised that Microsoft did this. I was surprised to see that this news came across my feed here. But I'll just read from the website. It says, Microsoft has acquired esports tournament and event organization platform Smash.gg for an undisclosed amount. The news was shared today by Smash.gg Twitter account and confirmed by Microsoft via its MSN Esports. It says, with this acquisition, the Smash.gg community and tournament organizers will continue to benefit from the Smash.gg platform. While our team will now benefit from additional resources and support as a part of the Microsoft Content Services team. In addition, notice on the Smash.gg website adds that the platform will continue as a self-service esports platform available to tournament organizers from all game communities. Smash.gg launched in 2015 as an esports tournament and event organization platform, including bracket setups and registration support for both online and live events. That was written by Rebecca Valentine. And yeah, I've heard of Smash.gg. I know a lot of fighting game events use Smash.gg, but this shows like Microsoft is not done moving yet, man. Like this is, I don't know what other moves they've made in the esports field. This is one of the first that I've really heard about.
Next, I think they need to acquire Mash.gg.
Yeah, we'll do all their podcasts for them.
Phil, yeah. Call me.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I am surprised. Like, you know, this, I think this would have worked out well with if they would have kept, Mixer. If they would have kept Mixer going. You know, you combine the services that like, cause Twitch has no integrated esports service. Right. And if they would have, you know, like if they would have integrated that with Mixer, even though they're not, you know, I mean, Mixer is going to Facebook now. So But they did cut a deal with Facebook because like xCloud is coming to Facebook too. So maybe they'll integrate directly into Facebook. I hope not. That'll be a pretty bad scenario, to be honest with you. Even though out of like between Twitch and Facebook, Facebook is the one that's actually trying to do something about music copyright for their streamers. So that's the thing about that. But so yeah, that was interesting. There was also an article that talked about, well, Phil Spencer talked about how developers make money in their, like with their games on Games Pass. So maybe PlayStation should take some notes and figure it out, you know?
Well, the problem is they basically said they haven't figured it out. They take it on a case by case basis. So.
Yeah, it's on a case by case basis right now. They haven't fully figured it out. So I said, in certain cases, we'll pay for the full production of the game. Then they get all the retail opportunity on top of Games Pass. They can go sell it on PlayStation, on Steam, and on Xbox and on Switch. Sometimes the developer is more done with the game, and it's just a transaction of, hey, we'll put it in Games Pass if you pay us this amount of money. He continues, others want agreements more based on usage and monetization, and whether it's a store monetization that gets created through transactions or usage. We're open to experimenting with many different partners because we don't think we have it figured out. When we started, we had a model that was all based on usage. Most of the partners said, yeah, we understand that, but we don't believe it. So just give us the money up front. And then he also says, the thing that has been heartwarming to me as someone who's been building games for so long is to see games come to the service that wouldn't have been built without it. When the team, if they're just out of pitching the publishers on a retail game, if it doesn't fit into some Excel spreadsheet that tells you what the retail outcome will be, then it doesn't get greenlit. You see this in things like Netflix. There are clearly shows on Netflix that would have never been greenlit by NBC or CBS or ABC in the old model, and frankly, can have real success. And my hope is that Games Pass can get to that same level. So maybe that's one reason Sony hasn't really tried to push into it, because so Microsoft's pockets are definitely deeper than Sony's. You know, they definitely have deeper pockets. I mean, that's why they were able to dig out of this hole in the first place, to be perfectly honest with you. I've said it so many times at this point, but if what happened to the Xbox One happened to the PS4, the PlayStation brand would not exist anymore at this point. So those deep pockets are helping them create this service, and they're looking for they're looking for a way to make it work out. And I think it's interesting too, because a lot of developers are saying that just want the money up front, which I think I can understand it from a development standpoint, because it's like, you know, we this doesn't run on hopes and dreams. We need to pay our bills right now. But that also works for Microsoft, because as the Xbox service, as the, you know, the Games Pass service gets bigger and more people start using it, they're not paying out any royalties for those.
Right.
You know? They're just not. So if you pay our bill to help, you know, if you pay us this amount of money to help us get the game developed, because that actually sounds similar to the way PlayStation or Sony handles indies in some cases, like why some indie games are PS4 exclusives or PlayStation exclusives for an extended period of time. Because I don't know if Sony still has, they probably do, but Sony had this indie games fund that they would use to contribute money, you know, toward games. I'm pretty sure Epic Games does the same thing, and that's how they get their exclusives in many cases, especially games like Borderlands. Like, there's no way they didn't line up, you know, Gearbox's pockets for Borderlands, you know, that help grease the grips, you know what I'm saying, a bit. So yeah, I am curious to see how they go forward. Because I think Microsoft will want more of a stable model. Well, they had a stable model, but then they decide to start to get a bit flexible. So maybe it's more of a gamble and to see how it's going. But if it's working out well, because they seem to be pleased with how it's working, and if it's working out well, then maybe they'll just keep doing that. Because there's just, yeah, I would have never would have expected EA to put fucking EA Access on Games Pass.
Well, I think too that, you know, maybe, you know, it's the kind of thing where you build a relationship such that, okay, you find the indie developer with, you know, not much to their credit, but they're like, hey, we got this really awesome idea for a game, give us money. So they invest in it, and then, you know, when it comes time for the next game and they're like, hey, give us money. Now you're like, okay, well, last time we just funded it up front. This time we want to get a little bit on the back end here. So let's, you know, let's modify the deal. And the deal can grow as the company morphs until eventually they're a big enough studio and Microsoft can just outright acquire them. So,
yeah.
I think there's something to be said for not having one blanket policy to, you know, I think it can be harder taking it on a case by case basis because you have to know the value of everything and to make sure that you're getting the best deal and what you're doing is right for the situation. But as long as you have some kind of idea, you know, you can get things that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get. I mean, like he pointed out, some games wouldn't be made if they didn't offer the money up front. And, you know, if you can get those kind of games made, and even especially too, you know, you pay the money up front, you get the game. And then even if they're able to go and sell the game on PlayStation, the developer is at least still in business. So the next game you can get a better deal and not just a better deal for Microsoft, but a better deal for the developer as well. And so everybody can come out ahead here. This isn't necessarily a lose-lose proposition.
It's not. And you know, you really usually do not see large companies pivot like this. You don't. Like that, usually the larger the company, the more red tape you have to go through, the harder it is to get things done. But it seems that Microsoft is going to these developers and is like, okay, well, you don't like that model. How about this? Well, how about that? You know, what works for you? Let us bend around that. And it's just kind of funny because, you know, larger companies tend to have the ability to do so, but because of the way their structure works, they won't, you know. So, yeah, I thought that was like just really interesting that it's kind of like, okay, no, well, we will work with you because we want this Games Pass thing to really work out. I mean, honestly, I know a lot of people with Games Pass. A lot. If I didn't own so many games already, you know, I probably would have Games Pass myself. But I'm wondering now, at what point is it just worth it for me to get Games Pass? You know?
I think you're already there.
You think I'm there already? That's well, actually, worth it, you know, to get Games Pass?
Here's what you'll do. The money that you would give to Games Pass, give to me. So like $15 a month, whatever, give to me. And the time that you would spend playing games on Games Pass, go through your Steam backlog.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll pass, Nick, on the giving you the $15 a month deal. You
know, I'll cut $10. I'll cut it down to $10.
What a steal.
I'm doing you a favor.
What a steal. You hear this guy? Well, this guy is a man of the people. Wow. So yeah. No, I think it's pretty awesome what they're doing. Let's go ahead and move on to a bit more Microsoft news. Microsoft is hinting at turning Xbox into an app for television. It says Microsoft is in the early phases. I think this is a Verge article, by the way. Microsoft is in the early phases of rolling out its xCloud streaming service on mobile devices, but TVs are the next logical steps. In an interview with The Verge, Xbox chief Phil Spencer has revealed we'll likely see an Xbox app appear on smart TVs over the next year. I think you're going to see that in the next 12 months, said Spencer. When asked about turning Xbox into a TV app, I don't think anything is going to stop us from doing that. And I mean, this just really feeds into their Xbox Everywhere plan. They want to make the barrier of entry so low to get into the Xbox ecosystem that you have no choice. You have no choice. You buy a television. Obviously, a television that has Bluetooth controller. So you buy a television, you buy a $50 controller, right? And you're just like, okay, well, now you don't have to spend $300 or another $500 on an actual Xbox. You can just use the Xbox xCloud service. Shit, you could just get Games Pass. You know what I'm saying? Just get Games Pass because it comes with xCloud. And there you go.
You don't have to worry about your wife throwing out your console because it's not actually an air filter.
Yeah. Like you don't have to do that. Like, and to a lot, I know it's a lot of people who are listening to this because this is for the core. This is for the hardcore. This is for the real gamers, you know, chuckle. But this is, you know, the audience that usually listens to this, it probably doesn't really sound appealing, but to a lot of people, that's going to sound appealing. It's going to sell televisions. Like this television supports the Xbox app, meaning you don't have, it literally is a money saver for a lot of people. it'll be a money saver for a lot of people, so they won't have to actually buy an actual Xbox, man. You know? The bar to entry is on the floor when this happens, to a degree.
I mean, I already think it's pretty low, given that most of us have, you know, decent enough PCs to play games on Games Pass anyway, but when you look at this, I mean, like you were talking earlier about, you know, Activision only caring about install base. Like, at what point is it like Microsoft's install base is everybody? it's getting there. And, you know, you think about, oh, well, I'm going to have, you know, I want a PlayStation and an Xbox or whatever. You know, the add-on cost of, you know, the PlayStation, that's your investment, but the add-on cost of getting an Xbox, if it's already part of your TV and you just have to get Games Pass or whatever, like that's nothing. Like you're in both ecosystems there. Like, yeah, from a pure number standpoint, we might look at this console generation and say, okay, like Sony sold more, you know, actual, you know, PS5s than Series X's for Microsoft. But when you take into consideration stuff like this and PC subscriptions, there's a chart where I think Microsoft just completely blows Sony out of the water. And, you know, assuming that Microsoft's monetization is on point, they're going to go soaring into, you know, the next generation or, you know, I shouldn't even say the next generation, because with this kind of stuff, again, this is like post console generation thinking. And yeah, you know, like
right.
Microsoft's just going to take off like they're in Flight Simulator and just go.
And, you know, we still talk like Microsoft versus Sony, and Sony has to do this and Microsoft has to do this. But in reality, this is going to hit a point where Sony is no longer a competitor to Microsoft. It's not. It won't be a competitor. Actually, I mean, Sony doesn't really have a competitor to xCloud. It doesn't. The xCloud's competitors like Stadia. You know, Stadia, sorry, it's not Stadia, but like Stadia, that's the xCloud competitor. But once Microsoft, like, Sony won't really be a competitor. Just like Apple is not really a competitor to Microsoft right now. You know what I'm saying? They haven't been for some time. I mean, they both work in the PC space, but they're not like real competitors like that, you know? And I think we're heading for the same thing with Microsoft and Sony. They're both going to be making games, but Microsoft almost won't even care what Sony does, because it's not a choice anymore. You don't have to choose between a PlayStation and an Xbox. You know, what Sony has to worry about is once you're in that Xbox ecosystem, why do I need to buy a PS5? Why do I need to spend $500 for two games a year? That's what you're looking at. Like, because Sony, I think at the most, you're going to see three big first party titles from Sony in a year. I can't see there being more like, in what year did they drop more than three big first-party titles?
Horizon Zero Dawn, Spider-Man, and God of War. That was all the same year, right?
No.
That was
Spider-Man, God of War the same year. Horizon Zero Dawn was 2017.
But it was like the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, right?
Horizon Zero Dawn was like March of 2017, and God of War came out, didn't it? Come out in like April of 2018 or something like that?
Never mind then.
And Spider-Man came out in September.
Okay. I'm trying to help you out, Sony. You got to work with me. This is why I'm not a Sony shell.
You guys can't see it, but Nick just like took his Microsoft hat off and put his PlayStation hat on. He's switching sides because he fights for the underdog, you know?
I defend the entire games industry.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, that's, I think, more of the danger for Sony right now. I mean, right now, in December of 2020 and probably through 2021, this is not really an issue for Sony too much. I just imagine that they can see, even if they're blowing smoke up somebody's boss's ass over at Sony right now, somebody sees the wave coming in. You know what I'm saying? And they're working on something.
I just wonder, like, I mean, putting this on the TV, like, I can see, I guess, like Roblox or Fortnite. I mean, those don't seem like very graphics intensive games.
Right.
And I can just see them, you know, like those are the kind of games that'll get the kids, you know, and at that point too, it's like, you always think about like, oh, like, you know, like the parents buying, like not really sure what they're buying for the kid, but it's like, no, if you've got the consoles and the TV, like it's game over. It's game over. Like I'll buy a PS5 because I want a PS5.
Right.
But like, I feel like at some point, like the kids, especially like if they grow up, I mean, think about, growing up where like Nintendo was like the shit, and it's like Nintendo is still, you know, like beloved, you know, they've kind of, the role is morphed, but they're still beloved. And I would just wonder like how, I feel like this is to put that in the TV and make it that at that basic of a level that you don't even have to think about an extra box. I mean, think about how, you know, setting up your first console with the little connector switch that you had to switch between console and TV, and you had to make sure the TV was on channel 3, and like figuring that out. And now it's just, oh, you just plug an HDMI cable in. And now it's like, no, it's just in your TV. It's just in there already. And this
is blowing Nick's mind,
it
man.
I don't see, like I said, I think Sony might sell more PS5s than Series X's, but when you look at total install base, Microsoft's just going to own it. And there's, you can't compete with this. You, unless you start putting PS5s in TVs, but then who's buying like a $1,000 TV? And it's not going to be.
Well, this has happened before. Do you don't remember that you could get a TV with a Nintendo built into it? Like the way you just said it, like you literally could buy a TV with a Nintendo built
into it. I don't remember that. No.
Yes. You could literally buy a TV with a Nintendo built into it. I don't know if they ever did that for the Super Nintendo.
What?
But there were TVs that you could buy that had Nintendo's built into
them. The entertainment system, the old NES?
The NES, yes.
But you see, but that was different because you still needed the cartridges. Like this, yes,
this is true.
This is entirely, it's completely self-contained. Like you're not, you just need the controller separate, like, because obviously you can't play without it, but you know, you go in and you're buying and downloading the games and everything, and you're getting that whole experience, that whole ecosystem, and you don't need anything else. I don't know. I just think that this, as much as we're saying that Sony needs to be worried about Games Pass, like this, I mean, it's really, this is putting Games Pass on the TV is really what this is. It's Sony needs a way to do that. And I think if anything, I could see, I would think if anything, if I'm Microsoft, I'm like, look, we want to get like, because Microsoft is becoming so hardware agnostic, get Games Pass on the PlayStation. And then Sony can put out hardware, and then
let
Sony have the console space. And then Microsoft can just put Games Pass out with their games everywhere. And if you play it on PlayStation, that's great. And if you play it on your TV, you know, whatever. And eventually it's like how we got the Sonic and Mario and at the Nintendo and Sega Olympics or whatever, you know, like that's mind blowing to a 90s kid. Like,
yes.
You know, someday, you're going to, you know, turn on your PlayStation and see the little Xbox logo. And you're going to be like, what happened?
Yeah. I mean, like they actually, I did find that television, the it's Sharp made it. It was a Sharp TV. Does Sharp still make televisions?
Yeah. I have a Sharp downstairs.
Yeah. So it's a Sharp TV, $700 to $1,800. If you want it, you can buy it. But it does have a built-in NES directly into the television. I don't know how much they cost when it actually first came out. I do remember going over somebody's house and they had one.
Ooh,
so
that's that feels like a good idea, but that's not. that was an idea ahead of its time.
Yeah. So if you ever. You turn on your television, all of a sudden you hear the fucking PS5 in the back, like whirling up. Like, yeah, not the greatest idea. But like I said, it can be, I shouldn't say it can be beaten, but it can at least be addressed. Like, Sony needs to address it. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's going to get to a point where Microsoft is not competing with Sony. Actually, it will be in Microsoft's best interest to work together with Sony to get the xCloud on there. I know Microsoft for sure wanted to get Xbox games on the Switch.
Oh yeah,
they wanted to, but I think that deal might have broken down between Microsoft and Nintendo, because based off of what Phil said, I think a few weeks ago, I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
I think Microsoft knows that their future is hardware agnostic. And I think if anybody's holding it up, it's Sony. That they're just, you know, I mean, look what they did with the Fortnite stuff, where they're like, oh no, like it took a lot of cajoling and negotiations to get
That's what happens when you're sitting on top.
Right.
And they're going to continue to do that with their position locked in. But as soon as that gets shaky,
they think it's locked in.
When that gets shaky, we're going to see a lot of, you know, maneuvering from Sony. Like, think about like when they were in a bad position after the PS3 launch and after the PSN hack. That was some of the best Sony we've seen. That was some of the best Sony we had seen. You know, so yeah, so I am curious. I'm not saying all this to kind of beat up on Sony, but I am really curious to see what they're going to do, because they have to do something. So, but now we'll move away from actual console news. We're going to talk about The Last of Us a little bit. It looks like HBO has ordered a Last of Us series. Like, I think it's been tossed around that this was going to happen, but they officially ordered episodes. They ordered an adaptation from Craig Mazin, I think, and Neil Druckmann. So it says, this is from Deadline.com. HBO has given a series order to The Last of Us, the adaptation of the PlayStation video game from Chernobyl creator Craig Mazin and game creator Neil Druckmann and Game of Thrones executive producer Cal Strauss. The series is a co-production with Sony Pictures Television in association with PlayStation Productions, Word Games, and Naughty Dog. The network didn't reveal how many episodes have been commissioned. I mean, if you guys want to use the We Are Survivors model, it's about six. It's about six, maybe five. I actually have to go back and look and see how many episodes we did for the first game. Because this is for the first game, because it says the series is going to take place 20 years after, you know, the main event. And that's the first game. I think the second game takes place 4 years after, if I remember correctly. It's 4 years after, so 24 years. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm looking forward to it. I want to see what they do, you know. Because I never thought the story of The Last of Us was that great. The thing that made The Last of Us really good was its dialogue, its voice acting, and its cinematography. The story is okay, you know. Kind of predictable, too, to be honest with you. It really depends. If the live action series makes me hate Joel as much as I did when I played the game, then I will call it a success. You know, because that's a good thing. If I hate a character, like a fake character, if I hate this guy, like, oh yeah, you wrote that really well, you know. And it's not just out of pure annoyance, you know, so. But yeah, that is on the way, a Last of Us series. Man, who knows when it's actually going to be out. Actually, I think somebody speculated. I don't know. When's the last season of The Walking Dead? Is it 2022?
I think so.
I think somebody speculated that we would see this series premiere in alongside the season finale of The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead, like, the main show is ending in like 2022, but there's spinoffs and whatnot. Like, the Walking Dead universe will continue on television. So I don't know if we need to be concerned about The Last of Us looking to be like, oh, we'll serve your zombie needs, because
no. Well, especially because especially if they do the whole, if they do the whole game in one season, then I can't imagine that it would be that, like, you know, they're going to try to actually pick up with the, you know, that crowd for the Walking Dead. I mean, honestly, if you want to make it a good show, it does only, like, each game should only be a season. Like, don't try to stretch it out and, you know, stuff like that. Even though, I mean, I guess it's going to be hard, period, because a lot of the game is actually walking through and playing stuff and things like that. And, you know, in terms of cutscenes, you don't have that many hours. So there's going to be a lot of filler anyway. But to turn it into a season one, season two from the first game, yeesh, I don't know if I would want that.
I would hope if they were going to do that, like, do season one, like, you know, do the game and then do season two, just, you know, kind of like go from there. Don't necessarily, like, don't do The Last of Us 2, at least, you know, like you said, there's 4 years between them. flesh out that 4-year gap.
Yeah.
I mean, time that way.
They could do that. Yeah. They could flesh out that 4-year gap, which I think is a little tough for a show like that because the actress specifically Ellie is going to age faster. Right.
Yeah.
Unless they pick like a 20-year-old or 21-year-old to do, you know, Ellie as like a 14-year-old. Yeah. She'd be 14, which wouldn't be the first time.
Well, if they just do like 1 year per season, then you could actually let the actress like age progressively. Just hope she doesn't have like a growth spurt in the middle of filming.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see though. Also, BioWare delivering some devastating news for fans today for some. So I did see some people freaking out about this, but I guess we'll see. But Casey Hudson and Mark Dara are leaving the studio. This is from IGN.com. EA has announced that Casey Hudson, the general manager of BioWare, and Mark Dara, the executive producer on the upcoming Dragon Age, will be departing the company. All currently ongoing projects, including Anthem Next and Next Dragon Age and Mass Effect, the Legendary Edition remasters among them will continue as planned despite leadership shifts. Samantha Ryan will continue to oversee the studio, while Christian Daly, who joined BioWare from Blizzard, will now be leading the Dragon Age project as executive producer, with Matthew Goldman remaining as creative director on the project. And the Mass Effect Collection will continue to be led by Mark Gamble, as the team also remains hard at work on the future of that franchise. This marks Hudson's second departure from BioWare, as he left studio in 2014 and announced a new position at Microsoft in 2015. Hudson rejoined BioWare in 2017 when then GM Aaron Flynn stepped down, while the company searches for a new GM. Gary McKay, the senior director of development operations, will act as interim studio GM. They will always be an important part of the studio's history. We appreciate their many contributions and we look forward to seeing what they'll each do next. Laura Meal, chief studio officer, EA, said in a statement announcing the duo's departure. So obviously this is shaking some people up, thinking that, you know, the next Mass Effect isn't going to be that as great. The next Dragon Age isn't going to be as great. Somehow they're probably going to fuck up the Mass Effect the Legendary Edition, even though, let's be real, that comes out like February, doesn't it?
I think it comes out. Like, it's coming out early next year. Yeah.
Yeah. That's done, guys. That's pretty much fucking done. And it's in heavy, heavy QA right now. But yeah, that's what people are thinking. And I'm just kind of like, well, they already fucked up Mass Effect Andromeda, so.
Right.
I don't know. Look, guys, I'll put it like this. I don't know what you expect from them. I don't think that BioWare is ever going to hit that standard that you guys put them on, because you're remembering what it was like to play Mass Effect, Mass Effect 2, Mass Effect 3 when it came out when you were younger, right? Before there was anything else like it. That's that nostalgia that people remember. I don't know if they can match that now. Even if the game is as good as Mass Effect 2, let's say, it still won't seem as good to you because it doesn't have that same feeling. You know, like, oh, I've never seen anything like this before. I'm sorry, like, I just don't know what you're expecting. Like, people are shitting on BioWare, like, and trust me, I will dump on BioWare for what they did with Anthem. That was a fucking shit show. was really, really bad.
One would hope that when they remake Anthem, that it will be like nothing you've seen before, specifically the first Anthem.
Yeah, like, I just don't know what you're expecting. Like, look, don't freak out about it. We'll just wait and see. We'll wait and see what they do.
You know, I can't help but wonder, and I feel like some of these studios, they get this reputation for putting out this amazing work, and it's deserved. They put out some, you know, legendary games. I mean, you know, the Mass Effect franchise, you know, at the end of the day, it's groundbreaking. I can't come up with enough superlatives to describe it. And, you know, and BioWare, rightly so, should reap the rewards of that. But it's been over 10 years now. I mean, since the first Mass Effect, it's like 13. And how many of the people that worked on those games are still there? And the company itself might be named BioWare. You look at Casey Hudson, he left and came back and he's gone again. And, on the one hand, there's some people there. I'm sure they're there because they were fans of the first Mass Effect and they're like, yeah, I get to work on more Mass Effect. But at the same time, it's not the same, So on the one hand, you've got new people and new blood can be a good thing for revitalizing a franchise. Don't get me wrong, but you don't have the same, vision necessarily driving the project that you had before. The other thing too, is that you want to iterate on that vision. You don't want to put out Mass Effect, the first game, but just like now, like, I mean, they're doing that with the Legendary Edition, but like, that's a specific project. Like you want to like modernize it and update it and keep changing it and make sure that it's fresh. And so, yeah, it's not, you can't get the same thing there. Hopefully what's important is they've got good developers there who have a good handle of where they want to take the franchise, and they don't want to take it too far away from what people are envisioning of how it should be. And they can work with the tools that EA gives them to work with. As long as that all falls into place, I think this will be fine. But it's not 2007 anymore.
Clearly not. Even though, I don't know, what was like, we were in the middle of the financial crisis?
Now we're back at, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Maybe it is 2007.
Maybe this is what we need, you know.
2007 was the last time I was unemployed looking for a job, so.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to wrap up with some, a little bit of unexpected news. Everybody's going to be glad to hear. But Travis Scott, kind of, that's important. I know he's important to everybody. Travis Scott reportedly grossed roughly $20 million for his Fortnite concert appearance. Now, to be clear, that was that virtual concert that they did, right? I don't know. He probably had to do mocap for it. Probably. But yeah, he made about $20 million. Now, to compare that, the record grossing, like a tour stop. I think that the highest like money he's made from a tour stop from his Astroworld tour in 2019 was $1.7 million. He made 10 times more money, more than 10 times more money in his Fortnite appearance than he did on concert. And it's not because he's not a small act.
Well, no, he was like 200 feet tall in the game or something.
Get off my show, Nick. But yeah, he's not like a small act. So I'll just read what they have here on Games Industry. Also, Rebecca Valentine here says Travis Scott concert appearance in Fortnite earlier this year appears to have made him far and away more than a typical in-person concert would. According to a source speaking to Forbes, Scott's concert grossed roughly $20 million, including merchandise sales. For comparison, a record-grossing concert on Scott's Astroworld tour last year reportedly reached $1.7 million in a single night. The full tour last year grossed $53.5 million. So, I mean, just to be clear, like, one concert appearance, was it 10 minutes? Like, it wasn't long. It was not very long. Like, was it 30 minutes? Like, an hour at most. Grossed almost half of what his entire tour in 2019 did.
To be fair, the Fortnite appearance did reach 27.7 million unique players with 12.3 million concurrent in the game. Whereas a concert appearance is what, maybe 60, 70,000 at a stadium?
That's true. But I'm sorry. A digital concert is way less work for the artist,
For the artist, but you've got if he's doing mocap, he's got to have the team handling the mocap for him
Yeah, but it's still significantly less people that have to be involved. He's going to take more of that money. I mean, somebody's taking more of that money home. I don't know if it's him, because I mean, obviously, I would say Epic probably paid him up front for it.
You know, I wonder if this is the kind of thing where you look at that kind of revenue and you look at that and you say, okay, like one, on the one hand, like, yes, it proves that Fortnite is a viable, you know, stadium, for lack of a better word, for, you know, performing in. But you look at other stuff like the Tupac hologram technology that we've got. And what's to stop a performer from saying, okay, I'm going to, you know, do like a mocap performance or something, or I'm going to show up and I'm going to do my tour at my, you know, I'm going to be at this stadium in like Denver or whatever, but I'm going to use technology so that I'm also performing virtually at stadiums across the country. And so you could have a performer, you know, do like a Travis Scott like experience, you know, and get like, you know, like 20 million people or however, you know, depending on how many stadiums you've got, you know, 10 million people or whatever, all enjoying the same live concert at the same time, where the performer is just in one spot and then virtually everywhere else. I think this is, you know, this is one of those things where we're coming out of the pandemic. We're like, how is the world going to change? I think the entire concept of concerts could look very different over the next decade.
Well, I think this is definitely going to raise some eyebrows and have some people kind of taking a look at it. But at the same time, I don't think an in-person concert could do something like this, because when you pay for an in-person concert, you expect for that person to be there, you know, not a hologram, an actual person. People who do into this Fortnite concert, I don't even think you had to pay for it. I'm pretty sure there was no ticket sales for it.
Then how
was it?
No, I don't know how they, I don't understand these revenue streams. It must have all been advertising, like they said, the merchandise. I guess you get like because a Travis Scott skin or something.
Because Fortnite put the entire concert on YouTube. So yeah. Like, I would be pissed if I paid to go do it in Fortnite and then you just got to see it for fucking free on YouTube. Like, no, I'm pretty sure that, you know, you just went into the game and got into the concert. So maybe you got Travis Scott items, you know, something of that nature, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to raise some eyebrows. You know, it's over when Beyonce does her Fortnite concert.
Yeah.
When Beyonce does her Fortnite concert, I just want to see what's going to fucking happen, because the Hive is going to flood Fortnite. it's going to be like two planets crashing together. Like, it's going to be a spectacle if you're watching from a distance. You know, how is Epic going to protect the Bayhive? You know, but so listen, it looks like Scott isn't done, because there's additionally Forbes reports that Scott's partnership with PlayStation earlier this year, he made a partnership in which he was named a strategic creative partner, earned him at least $1 million. Details on the partnership have not been announced, though through a source speaking to Forbes described it as a multi-year deal that could involve a co-branded console and perhaps even a game designed by Scott, and is expected to ultimately earn $20 million more. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily looking for a game designed by the guy. We'll see. You can't just have anybody out there fucking designing the game. I'm sorry. Like, you just can't.
Shades of Shaq Fu.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't design a game. I'm like, yeah, let's make a shooter. Headshots only. Like, you know.
I've been on plenty of gaming forums, and I'm pretty sure that the average gaming fan has a very good grasp of what goes into making a game, that they can implement an idea and execute it properly.
Oh, of course they do. I'll just let it be awkward.
Fair enough.
So we're gonna go ahead and close up on that. Now I'd like to thank everybody for listening. What is coming up this week on the Mash Those Buttons Network? I say every week that I'm gonna look at it, and then I don't. So this week, though, on the Mash Those Buttons Network, we do have a new, well, I shouldn't say this week, I should say next week. So the week of December 6th through 12th, we're gonna have a new Warcraft Reloaded, a new Clan of Three. We're going to have a new Double Tap, and we're going to have a new Dropping Spicy, a new WoW Talk. So yeah, it's going to be our week. It's going to be one of our, it's going to be like a lighter week. And obviously we're going to have a new Mash Those Buttons show. So yeah, that's what's going on with the network next week. Once again, I'd like to thank everybody for listening. If you want to figure out what's going on, keep up with what's going on with us in the Mash Those Buttons Network, you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork. Nick, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buns Network on WoW Talk. This week, we're going to have Kurabara, who's been on this show before. He'll be joining us to talk about his thoughts on the Shadowlands expansion. You can also find me on the Torn and the Goblin, which will be next week. And also, you can find me doing recaps on Clan of Three, our Mandalorian show. Last week, Edinar couldn't be there, so I filled in for him. So if you want to hear me talk about Ahsoka for an extended period of time, please go check that out.
Yeah, when you talk about what you're doing on network, you make me sound so lazy.
No way. You're the, you know, we get to shine because you put in all the effort behind the scenes. None of these shows exist without you, and you know that.
Uh-huh. Yep, you still get to shine, though. Oh, but yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Josh Stradamus. You can also find me on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. I definitely stream every Friday, but we're looking to kind of solidify the streaming schedule. We'll see what happens, because like I said on the show, we are starting a new Cyberpunk podcast that is going to, we're going to be releasing the first episode, I think, December 8th. And then after that, we're going to be releasing new episodes on Thursdays. So we should have the first episode. It's going to be me, Blaze, and Bob, possibly a third. We do not have a name for it yet, so you'll find out on the 8th. What the name is going to be for the show. So we'll be starting that soon. So you'll be able to hear me on that. You can also join us on Discord, which is mash.gg/discord. We love to have you join us there, you know, and come talk and join our great community. I encourage you guys to reach out to us with comments and questions. So you can do so on the Discord, like I said, mash.gg/discord, on Twitter. Or you can also just email us at contact@mash.gg. And if you want to help us out, the best way to do so is to share the show with others and to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. And if you want to take your support a bit further, you can do so on Patreon, which is patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month and gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. And we also have a Teespring store, which is teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons. And you can also throw us a Twitch sub if you want to support that way. I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And with that, we are done for the evening. Thank you guys very much, and we'll catch you next week.
Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/themashnetwork, facebook.com/mashthosebuttons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/discord.